H1N1 hits close to home. One Terp Weekly Edition reporter's close encounter with the swine flu.
Protection against hate crimes now extends to the LGBT community.
And a sad moment in Maryland sports history, now on the big screen.
Terp Weekly Edition starts now.
This is Terp Weekly Edition, a look at the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland College Park. Terp Weekly Edition is produced by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio.
Welcome to Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Josh Naratsky.
And I'm Kara Crawford.
It looks like the College of Education may be the next victim of university budget cuts. Next fall, the college will merge 7 departments into 3. Administrators hope the changes will leave the college better equipped to cope with UMD's budget crisis and better focused in its mission to prepare the next generation of teachers. According to the Diamondback, the college has not yet decided which programs will be cut, but Donna Wiseman, Dean of the School of Education, says the college will ensure that students in the soon-to-be-cut programs will still be able to receive their degrees. There's more money news. The university has had a tuition freeze for 4 years, but students may be paying more than they're saving. In-state students still pay $2,215 more than average students attending a 4-year university. And out-of-state students don't even get to enjoy the freeze, seeing an almost 4% increase in last year's tuition. Still, the College Board says the facts are deceptive because the university's grants and aid are not reported. But don't expect this freeze to last. Provost Nariman Farvadian and Assistant Vice President for Administrative Affairs Ann Wiley are prepared to raise in-state tuition next year.
Imagine yourself as a victim of crime, simply because of how you look, what you believe, or how you choose to live your life. Terp Weekly Edition's Michael O'Neill reports on a recent meeting where faculty and students discussed ways to prevent hate crimes on campus. The university is making progress creating an environment of tolerance and acceptance, but as we hear, much work remains to be done.
Although America has come a long way from its dark past of hate and racial prejudice, hateful acts on people based on sexual orientation and race still occur. In 2007, students at Maryland may recall a noose hanging outside Nimeboro Cultural Center and the feelings of tension that incident sparked. Later that year, 2 students had swastikas painted on their door. These cases remind the university that work is left to be done in creating an environment of acceptance and tolerance. In a presentation titled Hate Crimes: Moving from Discrimination to Tolerance, students and faculty discussed the fact that our nation and world are seeing a resurgence in hate crimes. Fortunately, the University of Maryland campus is seeing a steady decrease in cases of hate crimes. In 2008, there were only 10 reported hate crimes, down from 24 reported hate crimes in 2007. And this year, there have been only 8 hate crimes reported. This according to police spokesman Paul Dillon of the University Police. To Luke Jensen, director of the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Equity Department, and a presenter at the panel discussion, the university should err on the side of caution and not think it is exempt of succumbing to hate crime. Jensen believes the university should continue to make diversity and tolerance the norm among students and staff.
The better job we do around diversity in general, the more we raise the expectations of our students, even before they arrive here, that diversity is an important component of excellence, and we demand excellence of all of our students. Therefore, diversity is going to be involved in pretty much everything you do. I think the more that message gets through, the more our students understand that when they come here, they're expected to behave in certain ways and to not behave in certain other ways, and that it's actually a learning opportunity to be around people who aren't the same as you are.
The panel also featured Speaker Brian Levin, director of the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at California State University, San Bernardino. He believes the state of Maryland is at the cutting edge of protecting victims of hate crimes and handing down stricter penalties to those who commit them. Maryland recently became the first state to make it a hate crime against homeless people. However, there are still 13 hate groups in the state of Maryland, where 150 hate crimes were reported last year, according to the Diamondback. To Jensen, who has been a victim of hate, the key for any victim to overcome the anger and hurt of a hate crime is to unite and fight with other support groups for equality.
When the institution provides visible, tangible support, and the students are connected in significant ways, then they're much more better equipped. They're much better equipped, I should say, to deal with whatever happens to come their way.
The Senate also passed a federal hate crimes bill that would expand the definition of a hate crime to people of sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, or disability. President Obama last week signed the bill into law. Jensen likes the new version of this bill and believes it will go further in protecting victims against hate.
I think that that enhanced penalties are important because it recognizes that a crime, a hate crime, is not simply a crime against that individual. It's a crime against a whole community. And that instance with the kid, with the Matthew Shepard instance, is a perfect example. That was something that took place miles and miles away, but it was something that then everyone in that community felt a threat from.
In College Park, I'm Michael O'Neill for TERP Weekly Edition.
Coming up on TERP Weekly Edition, a Maryland grad hits it big on Wheel of Fortune.
And professors go from the classroom to the ballroom.
This is TERP Weekly Edition. I'm Josh Narotsky.
And I'm Kara Crawford. Fail your last French exam? What's better revenge than watching your professor try to do the cha-cha in front of hundreds of people? Dancing with the professors happened last week, and TERP Weekly Edition's Jennifer Memelo was there to keep your professors on their toes.
Judging from the music playing behind me right now, you might think I'm in Cornerstone, but I'm actually in the Colony Ballroom at Stamp waiting for Dancing with the Professors to begin. So why did you come out to Dancing with the Professors?
So I did research with Dr. Froward on campus, and he's one of the performers.
Are you here for extra credit?
No, I'm here because he's my boss.
Oh. Good answer.
Good evening and welcome to our first annual Dancing with the Professors. This is exactly like Dancing with the Stars, and we've got your favorite professors from all over university. Just four of them this time, but they're from different fields, so hopefully that's good for you guys. And they're going to be dancing with professionals. They've been working really hard the last month and a half, so I want you guys to show as much support as you can when they dance, because I think they've done a great job. In addition to the audience vote, which is going to be 50%, we have our panel of judges. It's Daniel Calloway, and he's a ballroom dance instructor. He's been teaching dance for more than 25 years. Our next judge sitting on the end here is Barbara Bernstein. She has a background in ballroom, salsa, and rueda, and foreign folk dancing. Is Ms. Karen Bradley. She's a Laban Movement analyst, and she's the Director of Graduate Studies in Dance at the University of Maryland, right here. So our first performer for tonight is Professor Catherine Tech. She teaches French here at the University of Maryland.
Their dance is the West Coast Swing. Like all of the dances we'll see this evening, it's about partnership, the relationship. Now the relationship will change according to the dance and the music, of course. West Coast Swing is normally slow, sultry, sexy, uninhibited, and smooth.
So judges, how we doing? Are we ready on the scores? Do we need any more time? We good? All right. Thanks all around, guys.
That music was slow. That was hard to do, to go that slowly, so I thought you mastered it very, very well.
Our next performers are Lindsay Ross. She's a graduate student here at Maryland in Community Speech Therapy, and Professor Kenneth Froward. He's a professor in the Cell Bio and Molecular Genetics Department. He got his PhD from Berkeley, and his research includes a lot of sciencey stuff.
So, this is a dance about domination. Actually, it's unclear who's going to dominate in the end. You know, the woman may be leaning back, but she may still be in charge. And that should encourage you to step up to the plate a little more, too.
That was great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Becky. We'll be back to good work for coming in here, guys. So, said, it was about domination and control. Did you feel a lot of that in your practices?
Yeah, she's pretty much dominating.
We are about to see the waltz, and our hope is that the waltz will be romantic. Now, this is the dance of love, whether your idea is a Disney-esque idea of love, but it could be saccharine, and we'll see about that.
The waltz, historically, was a very scandalous dance when it first came out, because people turned and turned and turned, and the woman got very dizzy, and then she was easy to seduce.
Dance to the waltz.
Well, I don't really have any actual professional dance experience, certainly, and I haven't danced for years. I got this letter in the mail, and basically the reason I signed up is that I can't say no to my students.
Excellent work, guys. Look very regal. And let's hear from the judges. Let's start with Barbara.
Well, I have to say, I love the dress.
I thought that was beautiful, especially as it went on. There's a few rocky places at the beginning, really showed what you're made of, and you then came out of that and got smoother as it went along. Very well done. Good job.
Thank you very much, judges. Let's come over here. All right. But so I have a question for you. You know, you're dean of the business school. I'm sure a lot of people are trying to get jobs out here. Hit us with your top three, you know, like best bets for trying to get employed in this economy.
Optimism, professionalism, and great skills.
All right.
Richard, my husband's name is Richard Bell, by the way. Yes, but he went to Yale.
I have absolutely no dancing experience. My dancing experience is limited to the 2 weeks that Ian has been working on. We have gone not 0 to 60 in 2 weeks, but maybe 0 to like 10 miles an hour. For me, the worst parts of dance practice have been every dance practice from start to finish. It's been very, very, very costly to walk upright, it turns out. To hear the beat in a song, I just can't hear it. I can't hear a thing.
I would love to spend some time with you introducing you to the center of your body, which is located somewhere in there, and I know it's there, and actually you managed to access it several times.
But it definitely was club dancing. I'm not sure if that means we should use a club on it or what, but no, that was lots of fun. You did a really great job, and if that really is where you started, it has come a long way.
What would you guys give the professors on a scale of 1 to 10? What did you give them overall?
All of them? I think they all should get 8s and 9s.
So we'd like to present our winners.
So, in fourth place, we have Dean Patricia Cleveland and Derek Winkler. In third place, we have Catherine Chang and Robert McKay. Congratulations. Everybody ready? The runner-up in Dancing with the Professors 2009 is Richard Bell and his partner Ian.
For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Jennifer Memelo.
The state audit just revealed that hacking the university's network may be easier than previously thought. And that means your private information may not be as private as you thought. According to the Office of Legislative Audits, unauthorized users could access the internal computer network through the internet, and the system's firewall does not log all activity. The audit comes after a system glitch last March, which left university accounts vulnerable to unauthorized access. Maryland's Office of Information and Technology, however, says that students should not be worried, and that the findings actually show an improvement over earlier audits. All the kinks should be worked out by June of 2010. In the wake of the university's victory in the America's Greenest Campus Challenge, university officials are ready to implement two new programs to promote greater energy efficiency. Each program involves a machine that will digest trash into useful materials. Enzymes work to break down organic waste in each machine. A meeting between three departments early next month will determine whether the university will move forward with the programs. If the programs are passed, the Office of Sustainability, Facilities Management, and Dining Services may soon be able to take students' trash and turn it into an environmental treasure.
Life after graduation. It's not just about a job. We have a story of some good fortune for a recent alum. Lacey Brower tried out her Maryland smarts on the popular game show Wheel of Fortune, and Terp Weekly Edition's Caitlin O'Brien says she won.
Lacey Brower is one of the few recent graduates not struggling in this economy. Brower, a University of Maryland alumni who graduated in 2009, just won nearly $50,000 on the game show Wheel of Fortune. Lacey applied for several game shows last year, just for fun, and was surprised when she was chosen to be on the long-running show.
I went to the audition at a hotel in D.C., and it was pretty intimidating. There were like 200 people in a big ballroom, and we were each given a chance to play a mock version of the game in front of the crowd. We also did a written test that was sort of like the hangman, seeing how many puzzles we could get done in 5 minutes. After that, they narrowed the pool down to 20 finalists, and we actually played Wheel of Fortune. I got a letter in the mail a few weeks later saying I was going to be a contestant.
Lacey says she prepared for the show by watching as much Wheel of Fortune as she could, playing games online, and downloading applications to her cell phone. Her hard work definitely paid off. On Monday, October 26, Lacey won $46,390 in cash prizes and a trip to the Caribbean, estimated at $8,000. Several Maryland students knew Lacey would be on the show and had viewing parties in College Park. Susie Langren, a member of Lacey's sorority, Kappa Delta, said everyone in her house watched the episode. It seems Lacey's smarts don't only apply to trivia and guessing games. She has plans to use the money she won wisely, putting a down payment on her first house. She's also generous, buying her parents their first flat-screen HD TV. With Trip Weekly Edition, I'm Caitlin O'Brien.
Coming up, core courses are about to get a little more exciting.
And we take you inside the first screening of the Len Bias documentary. This is Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Kara Crawford.
And I'm Josh Narotsky. Tired of the same old monotonous core classes? A new pilot program called the I-Series may change the way students look at satisfying those early requirements. Terp Weekly Edition's Matt Butner tells us how the new classes could make studying more exciting.
Core classes aren't exactly the highlight of a student's career. If you have any doubt, listen to math major Matt Shriver.
They're completely ridiculous. Waste of money. Waste of time. When am I ever going to use any of that knowledge in my life ever again? World popular music and identity? Making me diverse? Seriously? Alright, so I know how to play some African drums. When am I going to use that as a math teacher?
A solution to CORE may be I-Series classes, a new pilot program that will allow students to examine big picture questions, look at ways intellectual traditions address them, and teach them about contemporary problems like the energy crisis. Journalism professor Ron Yarros was happy to jump at the opportunity of teaching one of these courses.
It was exciting to see that the university, for one, is looking forward and looking at new ways to teach general ed.
The pilot program has 24 classes, and they will begin this spring semester. Yarros tells us about the class he's teaching, called Information 3.0, Exploring Technological Tools.
Information 3.0 is my conceptualization of introducing all students on this campus, not just journalism students, with the tremendous amount of sources and information that we now have, and for all the students to not only see how various media are now being used in everyday life, whether it's what they're doing at work, how they're learning new skills, how they're communicating, how they're socializing, the entertainment that they're engaging in. And what I'm trying to do is not only share with everyone on this campus the latest and greatest things that they may not be aware of, but also to pursue some of the more sensitive topics such as privacy, how to make your, when it comes to education, how to make your paper more accurate, how to make sure that your sources are credible. A lot of the things that we now have to be thinking about that we didn't have to 10 years ago, prior to the time when we were bombarded with all this information.
If his class isn't enough to get you interested in checking out iClasses, there are others that may pique your interest. Acting Human, Shakespeare and the Drama of Identity will look at human identity through reading Shakespeare plays. Genetical Modified Humans, Physical Performance in the Post-Genomic Era will examine new technologies that could change what it means to be human. And classes like HIV/AIDS in a Global Perspective will look at pressing problems in the world today. Shriver has completed his core, but he might have taken iSeries classes if he could do it again.
The iSeries classes seem a little more pertinent or applicable to everyday real life than some of the core classes that seems like I'm never going to use it again.
You may not be able to get rid of a lab science or literature course, but for your other core requirements, iSeries classes may provide a fun way of learning about real issues in today's world. In College Park, for Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Matt Butner.
New and tougher laws on underage drinking mean changes are in store for house parties. Terp Weekly Edition's Josh Naratsky has details on the changes. He's also sampled student opinion and finds many are not pleased.
Partygoers at the University of Maryland have found that police have been cracking down on house parties more than usual. The reason? The Maryland State Legislature passed a bill increasing the penalties for purchasing or serving alcohol to those under 21. Sergeant Philip Tao of the University of Maryland Police Department explains.
Within the statute of the law, it says that an adult who owns or rents the property may not have people that are underage in possession or consuming alcohol on their property. So that's the context of the law. So if they violate that, now it's a full custodial arrest. They have to take a trip down to the Department of Corrections.
What would happen before?
We just issue them a citation. And then they would have to come to court.
Since the law has been put into effect, Tao has seen a decrease in the amount of house parties in the College Park area.
It has gone down since the beginning of the year. I have yet to have to go back to the same house twice.
However, not all are happy with the new law. Senior business major Sean Kirk, who lives in a house off of College Avenue, says that the new law is confusing and unnecessary.
To be honest, I really don't understand what the point is. And it's a huge fine, but also it's jail time, potential jail time and court time. But I do not understand why that should be a first offense. I understand maybe that could be the case if, you know, a police officer is coming back 2-3 times throughout the night.
Tom mentioned one of the reasons the law is so necessary is to change the culture of partygoers at the university in light of events that have occurred in recent years.
We've had a couple of related deaths over the last, since 2002, involving students at house parties and then also alcohol poisoning.
In College Park for Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Josh Naratsky.
Without bias is not without historic and cultural significance to the University of Maryland. Terp Weekly Edition's Matt Baderno has the story that all fans of Maryland athletics should know.
North Carolina had Michael Jordan, Duke had Johnny Dawkins, and Maryland had Len Bias. Bias was the ACC Player of the Year in 1985-86, the number 2 overall pick in the 1986 NBA draft, and probably the most beloved player ever to put on a Maryland jersey. He is also a cautionary tale of a young man who was on top of the world one minute, and had everything taken away from him the next, when he died suddenly of a cocaine overdose. Director Kirk Frazier was able to capture his tragic demise on film in his documentary, Without Bias.
The Without Bias documentary is definitely a cautionary tale. It's definitely a documentary that everyone can learn from. You know, if you can learn from someone else's mistake, always take that. And Len Bias is the greatest example of how one mistake could cost you everything.
Bias' tragic but preventable death has had lasting effects on those who lived through it or have since heard his story.
His death actually saved my life as well. And even though it was 23 years ago, you know, I've always thought that that story is still relevant to this day. And just to bring it back in to remind people of who Len Bias was is what I wanted to do.
Comcast Sportsnet anchor Chick Hernandez echoed similar feelings.
If you stay through the end, I'm the last soundbite in it. And I said, you know, quite simply, he saved all our lives. I was in that same culture, and I was right there doing the exact same thing. And it was that moment, that was the bellwether moment for me, to stop right then and there doing the silly stuff. And I was doing drugs, too. it stops you dead in your tracks, and if you're smart enough, it changes the way you do things. And so that's why I think it's important for the young guys who watch this tonight, because there'll be one or two athletes that might have the same opportunities or similar opportunities as far as a pro life goes. And if they just saw what they just saw right there, then draft night, if they're lucky enough to be drafted, and if they're lucky enough to sign an endorsement deal, there's no way that moment on that screen won't come right back to them and say, wow, okay, I know sort of what to look out for. I know or there are some pitfalls. Let's not go there.
The film will air Tuesday, November 3rd at 8 p.m. on ESPN as a part of their 30 for 30 series.
This is ESPN's 30th anniversary, so they were looking for 30 remarkable stories that transpired over their existence, and this is definitely one of the stories that was on top of their list in terms of, you know, how relevant it is to the state still. You know, it's not a situation that's forgotten. It's still something that we could all learn from.
My colleague, Mike O'Neill, who also attended the film's premiere at Hoff Theater on the University of Maryland campus, has more.
Len Bias was considered the ideal basketball player in every sense of the word. His leaping abilities, coupled with a pure jump shot and monstrous slam dunks, would leave an audience in awe. Following the event, I spoke to sports writer and TV personality Kevin Blackstone, who attended the screening, and felt the documentary did an excellent job of sharing Bias' story and impact.
This easily could have been sugar-coated, but it wasn't. I think it was brutally honest. I think Kirk Frazier did a marvelous job getting all the participants in this tragedy and all the witnesses to it to talk honestly about it. I thought it was a very good job.
Blackstone also believed the Bias tragedy went beyond impacting just the University of Maryland campus, but had a direct effect on the entire nation. Drug laws passed at the time were heavily influenced by the death of Bias.
Prince George's County, Washington, D.C. metropolitan area suffered the impact of it, and then you saw the ripple effects that went throughout the nation in terms of drug laws that just now are being rescinded from this tragedy almost a quarter of a century ago. So the impact of this death on so many was so wide. It's really, that's a remarkable thing about this film.
Production assistant and researcher Cecil Clark had previously never heard of Len Bias, but as he worked more on the story, he felt as though he knew Bias personally.
As I submerged myself in all the pictures and newspaper articles, archive footage, it felt as though I knew the person. And then, like, all the times that we interviewed the family, friends, newscasts, all of them, it was like he was a family member. I had so much information on him that I felt as though I could actually speak on Len Bias.
Clark wanted audience members to know that through a tragedy, good things can happen.
I want people to take away the simple fact that Len Bias was a great person, that, you know, with his tragedy, he ended up saving many lives.
The potential Len Bias could have been as a player we may never know. Many believe he could have been as good, if not better, than NBA stars Michael Jordan or Larry Bird. We can be assured that Len Bias will forever go down as one of the best college basketball players of all time.
We know how good he was here. We know how good he was when he did play against Michael Jordan. I've heard it said that Michael Jordan said the toughest person for him to ever play against in college was Len Bias. But, you know, we never know. All we know is that Len Bias was a marvelous talent as a collegiate basketball player. And that is the other part of the tragedy, because it should not have ended there, but it did.
In College Park, I'm Michael O'Neill for Terp Weekly Edition.
That's all for this week's Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Kara Crawford.
And I'm Josh Naratsky. We'll be back next week with more news from in and around College Park. And don't forget, you can take us with you. Find our podcast at www.twe.umd.edu.
This has been Terp Weekly Edition, produced and written by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio. Please join us next week at the same time for a look at the issues in and around the University of Maryland College Park.